our standard little review session here. What did we discuss yesterday morning?
We discussed briefly, we went through the repentance that were done after the Kundalakas, after Mahavira. And then he fixed himself in devotion to Krishna. He didn't want to miss the second chance. And then the Yamadutas, having been defeated by the Vishnudutas, they come back to Yamaraj. And Maharaj Parikshit asks the question, never before have the Yamadutas been defeated. What exactly happened after they came back? So the Yamadutas came back and more or less complained to Yamaraj, not very submissively, that there must be more than one Supreme Person. Actually, it doesn't hold logic, but it appears from what just happened that someone else besides Yamaraj is also the cause, the ultimate cause. So then Yamaraj himself explains, he is pleased by, even though they were not addressing Narayana very affectionately or with devotion, he is pleased by the reminder of Lord Narayana's name. And then explains to them that everything in the universe is just like these two horizontal and vertical threads of a fabric. Similarly, the Lord is holding everything together, although it may appear as if different varieties and so on. And ultimately, it's the two threads, maybe the efficient and the material cause. And then he explains that the ways of Dharma have to be understood. He begins to explain the ways of Dharma. That's what.
Yeah, that's where we ended. So because we're going to be covering the discussion from Yamaraj's side. It's important. He specifically addresses their specific questions, so I'm going to read what their specific questions are again, because they're going to be addressed. Our dear Lord, how many controllers or rulers are there in this material world? One question. How many causes are responsible for manifesting the various results of activities performed under the three modes of material nature? Close, but not exactly the same question. And then they want to know how this balances out if there's multiple controllers, each with different opinions about what is dharma and what is adharma and what is the fitting reward and what is the fitting punishment. Then we have chaos. We have a situation where either they cancel each other out and there's no reward and no punishment, or there's both reward and both punishment. So that's their logic. And therefore, the proper system, it seems to them, is there should be controller of all controllers, a judge of all judges, one who sets the standard, the last court of appeals, under whom the lower courts derive their authority, jurisdiction, and precision. They conclude that the supreme controller must be one, not many. Is it so? If you feel us fit to understand these things, please disclose these things, because we're in a lot of anxiety. Oh, and they also want to know those four beautiful persons that came, who are they? So today that question is going to be answered. Who were the Vishnudutas? So the first question, how many controllers are there? Is there one supreme controller? There's one supreme controller. And even in situations where it appears that there isn't a controller or there isn't a supreme controller or there's conflicting controllers, just that's the seeming situation, actually, there's one supreme controller. In this otam and protam example, there's a quote in the purport where Madhvacharya is addressing this also. He refers to Skanda Purana, where the same otam protam idea is presented. And he presents it, or the Skanda Purana presents it slightly differently. It's the difference aspect in the Abheda, Chincha Veda, Abheda Tattva, and in the Bhagavatam it's the Veda aspect. So that the threads are the threads. They're caused by the Supreme Controller, but the horizontal and vertical, these are the threads of the fabric. In Skanda Purana, they're the cause of the threads which makes the fabric. So the Supreme Lord is the cause of the material components. The emphasis in the Bhagavatam is he's the Mahavishnu in two different features, is the cause, the efficient and material cause of the creation. So in either way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Controller. And then there's the controlled. That's the living entity. The example is given in the last verse that we touched on. The last line is, as the bull is controlled by the rope through his nose. That's where we ended. Now he's going to take that same metaphor and go further with it. Text 13. Just as the driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas. Vachi, or Vak, the utterances of the Vedas, they control those that are dharmic. It's a subtle control, but it's control. And it works for those who are submissive to the Vedas. Those who are submissive to the Vedas are submissive to Narayan, because it was already said by the Yamadutas, the Vedas are emanations from Narayan, Sakshat Narayan. They're the same as the Supreme Lord Narayan. They're utterances from, but they're manifesting his direction, so they're manifesting him. So, all men, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of distinct orders of human society. Same thing the Yamadutas said. the material nature which is under the Lord's control manifests bodies. With those bodies there's designations, with those designations there's duties, and as long as one is submissive to those duties, one is submissive to the Supreme Lord. Same, different words, same concept, same message. In fear, the members of these orders all worship the Supreme Lord by offering him presentations according to their specific activities. Now I'm going to spend a little time discussing the difference between Varnashram and Daivi Varnashram, or Varnashram and Sanatan Dharma, or Varnashram and Bhagavat Dharma. Because Varnashram Dharma and Sanatan Dharma, while they acknowledge that for each embodied soul we have a different body, therefore duties might be slightly variant. They are variant. But the cohesion of Daivi Varnashram or Sanatan Dharma or Bhagavat Dharma is submission to the personality of Godhead. Conversely, one can follow Varnashram without that submission to the personality of Godhead in mind. One can simply perform various duties for the sake of elevation, eradication of sins, and establishing piety, and unknowingly, not so consciously, there is submission to the personality of Godhead. However, bhakti specifically is submission to the personality of Godhead expressed through the medium of. It's a different, you see the distinction, it's a difference of emphasis. Although side by side it may appear that both are doing the same thing. Like Prabhupada gives the example in Bhagavad Gita, that two persons may be working in a factory, and literally they're doing the same thing. But one may be in mundane consciousness and the other may be in Krishna consciousness. So the conceptions that one carries, the spirit of submission that one has to the Supreme Lord and his representatives, makes the difference between these two types of religious principles. Now remember, the Yamadutas did not understand the transcendental principle. They understood the modes of the religious principles according to the modes of nature. They got an A. And they failed when it came to the transcendental principle. And the application of that transcendental principle they also failed on, because the conception wasn't there. Their submission was to Yamaraj, not seeing Yamaraj as a representative of the personality of Godhead. Their conception was incomplete, their submission was incomplete, the consequence was incomplete, therefore they were foiled. Now he's explaining, they want to know, why did this happen? They had a wrong conception. Even those things Vedic, which regulate the conduct of the living entities who are submissive to the codes of the Vedas, it's incomplete. Please catch that. I mean, not only conceptually, but practically speaking. Practically speaking, in this world, persons that are very, very carefully, very meticulously, and very gracefully, full of grace, they're following the codes of religion. Oh, they're laudable in this world. They're hard to find. The Bhagavad conception, however, is that's incomplete. Just like we're going to hear Maharaj Yudhisthira describe, Yamaraj describe persons who are great, great, greatly knowledgeable persons. In this world, knowledge is very much revered. Who won the Person of the Century Award? It wasn't a saintly person. It was somebody with a big brain. Somebody who had a capacity to speculate very, 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 very nicely. So nicely they preserved his brain in a jar. But as much as great, great capacity thinkers think, they don't have, that is insufficient capacity to understand that which one who is very simple and pure in devotion can understand. This is the theme in the Bhagavatam, but it is so in part because our priorities are different. Our priorities are not transcendental. We see things transcendental through the lens of material examination, because we're conditioned. And the Bhagavatam is trying to massage that conditioning and leverage it to another position, transcendental position. Yamaraj is doing that with the Yamadutas. You think that I am the Supreme. Well, first of all, I'm not. And these principles of Dharma, let me educate you on the principles of transcendental Dharma. So Varnashram can connect with transcendental Dharma if the purpose of the codes of the Vedas are adhered to. That the purpose is satisfying the Supreme Lord. What is the verse in the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 2, that speaks about this? Right, so far. There we go. Good. The purpose, the actual purpose of Varnashram system, Sang Siddhir Hari Toshanam, Supreme Lord is to be satisfied. Now we have in our Chaitanya Charitamrita an interesting discussion, especially those of you that have gone regularly to Udupi, the Udupi Yatra. This should be very prominent passage in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited Udupi, he found at that time the leaders of the Mats were a little too much proud of their knowledge. It happens. Persons that have knowledge get proud. Even devotees that have knowledge get proud. It happens sometimes, too often. So because they were of that disposition, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very expertly and tactfully and transcendentally assumed a subordinate position. I'm just a young sannyasi. You're so experienced and so learned. Yes, we are so experienced and so learned. What is it that you would like to know? I would like to know what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. Well, the goal of life is to regain our position in Vaikuntha. Do you become situated in one of the four kinds of liberation? And the means of achieving it is the precise performance of Varnashram duties. Because when one does that, the Lord is pleased and He elevates one to the Vaikuntha planets. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no and no. He didn't say it exactly like that, but that was his response. That's external, like you said to Ramananda Roy. Achieving the state of love of God is the goal. The real purpose of varna is so that love can awaken within our heart. Just like, as he said to Ramananda Roy, yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, didasi, yad. Whatever you do, mat kurashva mat arpanam should be formed as a sacrifice, an offering, as worship unto me. That's external. That's the act. Now what about the consciousness of the actor? Should be with love. This is important. I'm going to connect it with something that comes at the end of our discussion this morning. To summarize it in simple language, the distinction of Bhagavat Dharma, or Bhagavat Marga, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, is one factually has to go beyond the intellectual acceptance and the intellectual performance of duties. One has to go beyond the mode of goodness. One certainly should approach through the mode of goodness that I should become purified by these activities. That's the mode of goodness. My existence should become purified. Why? So that the Lord will be pleased that when I come before Him, I'll be in a purer condition. Because otherwise it's me-centered. I want the recognition of being like this. And I don't want the suffering of being like that. And that's a preliminary motivator to come to the stage of goodness. But in order to understand what the Yamadutas are not understanding and what most of us are not understanding, is these transcendental principles of Dharma are meant to actually bring realization of our loving relationship with the Personality of Godhead. Although it's said again and again, we somehow aren't grasping it because we're grasping with our intellect. And therefore, one of the three favorite questions, or most often asked questions, is when will I get the taste from my devotional activities? Well, when we're actually purified, that is, when we go beyond the anarthas into the nishtha stage, following that nishtha stage is the ruchi stage. We have to be purified, but purified so that the motivation is not selfish, the motivation is to please the Lord. There's taste. There's some happiness that we can experience, even now, in our pretty grossly conditioned state, as we're getting relieved of so many sins and becoming situated more in goodness. There's a contentment. And there is also, there's contact, along with the mode of goodness, there's contact with the Holy Name, the deity form of the Lord, Krishna Prasadam, association with devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, experiencing the Holy Dham. We make pilgrimage to holy places. There's light at dusk and at dawn. Do it the other way. There's light at dawn, but it's not full light yet. It's still Abbas light. But our consciousness has to become purified by applying these transcendental conceptions That is, we should take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And in that position of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, we engage in our prescribed duties in a proper way. We act with theistic conduct at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Simply for His pleasure, gradually as our existence becomes purified, that contemplation, that motivation becomes more prominent. Then there's taste. Like the full light of the sun instead of at dawn, where we can see a little bit. So it's not like a really prominent set of terminology to make a contrast between Daivi Varnashram and Varnashram, but we'll find even right here in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada does emphasize Varnashram. As did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He himself was beyond... It's an important point. He demonstrated that he was beyond the limits of Varna and Ashram. He was a Bhajananandi. Well, he was capable of being situated he had no requirement for regulation, for purification. He took this intense vow that he would chant 3 billion names of the Lord. And he did it. He chanted 192 rounds a day. Today's Ekadasi, right? Some of us will increase our rounds. I doubt if we'll increase our rounds to 192. He did it every day. Same as Haridas Thakur. He was on that platform of chanting and completely detached from material circumstance. He did through the rainy season, living in a little straw thatched hut, and the rain was coming in, so he was sitting under the roof with an umbrella. And he was just a brahmachari. But he was so much awed and revered by the local people. They came and volunteered to build him a proper house. He said, no, it's only temporary. I'll just chant Hare Krishna. And it wasn't artificial. He was beyond any disturbance, any consideration. He was beyond Varnashram. But he accepted the sannyas order to make a point. We all should submit ourselves. Yajiracharati Shrestas. We should all submit ourselves to the regulations. He was teaching. He was acting to set an example and to give facility for preaching, because that's what appropriate, specifically appropriate for the sannyasa ashram. That was the service to Krishna that he was requested to do by his spiritual master. The same spiritual master, Gorkishore Das Babaji, that would not go to Calcutta to take care of blindness that his eyes were going bad. He sent his disciple to go to Calcutta to give Krishna consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his revolutionary way of preaching, his yukta vairagya position for a sannyasi. He was such a vairagi that he engaged everything in Krishna service. He got a Ford motor car in the early 1900s when only the viceroy and a few billionaires had cars. He got one. But it was only to be used for preaching. His preachers would go in the car. If somebody had to get medicine or some supplies from the market, you walk. Something for yourself? No. Something in this transcendental service for Krishna, engage it. So he accepted, he accepted the thread he established this, I don't want to go too far afield, but in addition to Gayatri Mantra, he established, it's a blend of the Pancharatrika system and the Vaidika system. Very, very ingenious. So he established the different varnas and ashrams, and yet everyone received the sacred thread who was qualified from the chanting of the holy name. Anyway, that's a whole very interesting discussion. But he established by his own example and his institution submission to the Varnashram institution. But what is the purpose of that? Satisfy the personality of Godhead. Chant the holy name. Awaken your Krishna consciousness. Satisfy the personality of Godhead. Understand very deeply the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. These distinctions of dharma. And the higher dharma is superior. The Yamadutas didn't understand it. Now he's explaining it. Even I, the one who you think is the Lord, I'm under that system. Got a ring through my nose, see it? And a rope. I'm controlled. The controller does have a supreme controller. And that's Daivi Varnashram. Or Bhagavad Dharma. There is a structure that Prabhupada writes. The divisions of varna and ashram are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone. It's practical. Even amongst devotees, we have to organize ourselves, unless we go live in a cave. But we're not qualified to do that. And we're not instructed to do that. So we need something to organize ourselves. As soon as you have two people, or more than two people, what's the system? What's the organization system? Daivi Varnashram. So we function, we do our duties properly, and we function peacefully together. But is that the essence of who we are and what our purpose is? No. Bring pleasure to the personality of Godhead. And one of the most difficult of all of this business is cooperating together. And one of the biggest obstacles is bodily conception. False ego that accompanies that bodily conception. I'm this. Well, I'm this. Well, I'm this. The satisfaction of the personality of Godhead is lost. It's our own individual gratification that becomes prominent. So we have to rise above the bodily conception and our petty false egos and come to the position of cooperation for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. It's one of the, practically one of the parting words that Srila Prabhupada gave for all the society's members. Practically, I don't know exactly what his parting words were, the final words, but the measure of how much you love me will be how much you cooperate together with one another. That's what he wanted. And in Kali Yuga, Prabhupada said, it's one of the most difficult things. Because we're contaminated. And Daivi Varnashram, Varnashram is meant to bring cohesion. We have differences. We have different bodies. We have different natures, different propensities. We should unite those different propensities under the banner of satisfying the Lord. And amongst those so many persons, somebody's the leader. Just like the Yamadutas were saying, it's chaos if you don't have a leader. And above that leader, there's another leader, and there's another leader, and there's a supreme leader. It's got to be like that. That's a natural system. And the supreme leader gives the system. And those that have an incomplete understanding just push on by making this, repeating the same point. But those that have an incomplete understanding, there's those that have no understanding and they're unregulated. And there are those that have some understanding and they're regulated. But Yamaraj and the whole of the Bhagavatam wants to pass on a concept of the supreme standard. That is, these regulations are for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. And there is an authority system within that structure. Yamaraj is one of them. But he's not the supreme authority. He's part of the structure. He's part of the otum-protum structure. He's part of the fabric. He's not the creator of the fabric or its ingredients. The concluding remark Prabhupada makes, very simple. Everyone is expected to offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord and perform duties as indicated in the Vedas. Not just one without the other. Oh, I just love God, I don't need to chant. I don't need to have to go get up early and have Mangal Arati. And I just love God. With a twinkle in their eye. Or the other way around, I just do those things and doing them with conscious devotion, that's not necessary, I just need to do those things. Get in the elevator, push the button, go to the top floor and get out. Not a mechanical system, it's a devotional system. Next is a combination 14-15. So he lists a whole group of persons that he says don't understand the purpose of the personality of Godhead. He understands the purpose, but he's including himself in that list. What he says specifically is that we are above ignorance and passion, we're situated in goodness. Ironically, he includes Indra in the list. Seems like he does have some influence of some ignorance sometimes, passion sometimes. But in any case, even those situated in goodness, cannot understand the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can be said of others? The message is, goodness alone is insufficient. It connects back with the original discussion about what can be done to prevent persons from suffering in the hells described at the end of the fifth canto. Well, the mode of goodness is not sufficient. What is sufficient? Transcendence. What is that means of transcendence? Getting the mercy of one who is in transcendence. Serving them very nicely, very submissively, very lovingly. Come to the position of transcendence. Awaken kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana. Once you come to that position, that's beyond goodness. Very nice, beyond goodness. Those that are studying first canto very carefully, there's a discussion in the ninth chapter where Bhishma Dev says to Maharaj Yudhisthira, to pacify Maharaj Yudhisthira of his bereaving over the calamity of the Kurukshetra battle, He says that no one can understand the purpose of the personality of Godhead. Whatever their knowledge capacity is, he's not knowable. His purposes are not knowable. So I was preparing for class this morning, I was thinking of different circumstances where, I'm thinking of specific circumstances where devotees are put into very difficult circumstance. We can read about Prahlad Maharaj being put into difficult circumstance. And it's a nice story. But when someone very close to you is going through a very difficult circumstance, it's hard to understand it. I'm being asked to explain why. There's such good devotee in such a difficult circumstance. Why? That was Maharaj Yudhisthira's question that he couldn't get an answer to. This horrible thing. Why are we implicated? So the Lord has a plan. Now, it's not that something horrible happens to somebody is the Lord's plan because he's sadistic or malicious or whimsical or something like that. What that plan is, the message, he's now starting to answer who the Vishnu Dutas are. They're representatives of the Lord who will come to protect. And if the devotee has faith, the theme of this canto is protection, or the theme, one of the 10 topics is poshanam, protection, and it's being illustrated here. Prabhupada says it right at the very beginning of the canto. So what is this factor of protection? Does protection mean there'll never be a problem? Never have a hard time. It'll never get cold. You'll never be hungry. You never have any body pain. You won't get old, you won't die. Just become a devotee. No. That's not the protection that's identified. So those things may happen, and very, very troublesome things may happen. Will the Lord's protection be there? Most certainly the Lord's protection will be there. Those that are not just on the mode of goodness platform, but are in a fully shelter-taking position, they'll feel that protection. They'll be comforted by that protection. They won't be disturbed by the very difficult circumstance. Although, very difficult circumstances can be trying with one's patience and can put a great test on one's faith. One who is in the transcendental position, they see that those are simply opportunities the Lord is providing to take more intense shelter of him. It takes a transcendentalist to go there. A person that's in the mode of goodness at some point is going to say, ouch. Stop that. And say it to the Lord. The transcendentalist will never do that. Their sense is that they will be always protected. And they are always protected. Even in calamities? Yes, even in calamities. Protected. And what purpose is the Lord fulfilling, creating that calamitous situation? Very difficult to discern. Even Bhishma Dev, also a Mahajan, very difficult to discern. Even Yamaraj, a Mahajan, very difficult to discern. What to speak of us? So where does that leave us? Well, we need not discern the purpose. We need to place our faith. And then at least that comfort will be there, knowing, just like a child in the lap of loving parents. Protection. Why this hardship and why this difficult situation that's causing grief? Why it's there, I don't understand. But comfort is there. Protection is there. Ultimately, that confidence is there for one who's faithful and has a transcendental conception. That's what Yamaraj is trying to impart. That's what the Bhagavatam is trying to impart. And we will get our opportunities to be tested. We will all get our opportunities. We'll get our opportunities to console those who are being tested. I'm getting some opportunities. And it's to test for me to how transcendental is my consciousness. To see, even in persons who are very close to me, who are in great, great difficulty, with calamitous situation, the protection of the Lord is there. We'll all get our opportunities. So he goes on, there's just a couple more verses and we're done. As the different limbs of the body cannot see the eyes, kind of obvious, right? The eyes are for seeing the limbs, not the limbs for seeing the eyes. So the living entities cannot see the Lord, who is situated as the super soul in everyone's heart, not by the senses, by the mind, by the life air, by thoughts within the heart, or by the vibration of words can the living entities ascertain the real situation of the Supreme Lord. Now he's ascertainable if he discloses himself, if he gives the eyes by which one can see, if one's eyes are covered with the ointment of love of God, and if the Lord so desires, he can disclose himself. But by ascending accumulation of better and better and better and better qualifications, the limbs can't see the eyes. The Lord is the seer, and whatever seeing capacity others have is derived from the seer. As well as the objects, the seen, that's also coming from the Lord. He's the supreme controller. And we're his dependent, subordinate servants. Yamaraj included. Just two more. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient and fully independent. He is the master of everyone and everything, including the illusory energy. He has his form, qualities, and features. And similarly, his order carriers, the Vaishnavas, like the Vishnudutas. So that one of their questions, who were these four? Here's the answer. Text 17 and 18. His order carriers, the Vaishnavas, who are very beautiful, possess bodily features, transcendental qualities, and a transcendental nature almost like his. They always wander within this world with full independence. The order carriers of Vishnu, who are worshipped even by the demigods, like Yamaraj, And he's not an administrative demigod, but he's an empowered service in relation to the functions of the universe. Possess wonderful bodily features exactly like those of Vishnu, and are very rarely seen. The Vishnu Dutas protect the devotees of the Lord from the hands of enemies, from envious persons. That's nice. If we have sufficient faith, protection. The agents of the Lord protect. And from my jurisdiction, even, as well as from natural disturbances. So, in the purport, Prabhupada brings it to a contemporary issue. There was a certain point in time when Prabhupada was saying that there was an imminent, there was a chance of that we were on the brink of a war, a world war that would start between India and Pakistan, and America would side with one and Russia would side with the other during the calamity. And many devotees just took it as another event of the world. And some devotees, it was like a strong wind came and a bunch of leaves just went flying. Oh, Prabhupada, what should we do? Like, you know, their whole business was to prepare for the war. And Prabhupada became very upset. And he articulated how upset he was. And here, he's doing it in a milder form. He said, you just take shelter of Krishna. During the war, you serve Krishna. You help those who are in some difficulty during the war. And you preach Krishna consciousness. And when the war is over, it'll be a great opportunity for preaching. If it happens. Well, should we stockpile food and arms in case, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Krishna will take care. He told, gave the example of during some, it was during the artificial famine that was created by the British to drive the price of rice up so they could make a lot of money and sacrifice a lot of lives of millions of people, no problem, if they could make a little money. So they accumulated a big store of rice and only let a little bit on the market. And Prabhupada explained, I forget what the numbers were, but the price was 10 times for a kilo of rice. And some people, being poor, could not afford 10 times. And that was their staple, and so they died. Hellish behavior to make a little money. Government. Hellish. So Prabhupada explained, as a householder, he had some wealth and he wanted to make sure that the devotees were okay. So in the place where he had one of his shops, there was a mandir, Gaudiya Math temple. So he went to the temple and said, are you okay? Can I bring you some rice or anything? He said, no. Krishna has taken care. Everything is fine. Are you sure? Oh, we're fine. So Prabhupada said, then I could understand how it is so that yoga kshema vaham yaham. Krishna protects and provides for his devotees. And it is so. When our consciousness is in a disposition of submission to the Supreme Lord, whatever it is that we require, it's there. It may be simple, but whatever we require is there. There's many stories in that connection, but and even when there's some calamity, like a world war, or when there's some calamity like something horrible happens to someone close to you, or someone close to you just deviates off the deep end with their principles and just go cuckoo. Yes. Now, if someone does something like that, doesn't mean that you're unprotected. They're unprotected. They've exposed themselves to the cruel hand of Maya. They will receive treatment accordingly. But as long as a devotee stays within the arena of devotional service, they're protected. Having that faith, naturally the loving Father protects and comforts and provides. So these messages carry very practical import, at least things that my devotional service are requiring me to be involved with. I find a lot of meaningful instruction and strength in what Yamaraj is describing. So he's answered a couple of their questions already, and he'll keep going. So 7:30. If there are those that have morning class and have to go to morning class, you feel free to do that. Is this one of those mornings or not? Oh, okay. Want to take your question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Maharaj, you know, like in the example, if a child suffers, the mother and the father suffer also. You can't say that they don't suffer. Similarly, if somebody who is under the care of a spiritual personality,
yeah,
they do something foolish or they suffer the attack of Maya, then the suffering also comes to the...
That's exactly one of the situations I'm dealing with. So that's also a test for the parents. Are they feeling the protecting hand of the Lord? Or is it... It's like what Hiranyaksha spoke to pacify his relatives. The parent that thinks I can... The bird that just spreads their wing to protect their little birds. Is that sufficient? So... The parent or the superior who is concerned about the welfare of the subordinate must invoke for their own protection the descending mercy of the Lord, and as the parent or the superior of their subordinate to invoke the shelter-taking capacity of their dependent. Not just make a material arrangement so that there's a fence that's so strong nothing can penetrate. There's no such thing. Fence may be built, but it's not that something can't penetrate it. So therefore, the imparting the faith that shelter in the Supreme Lord will protect you. In this material world, it's dangerous. Even when there is no apparent danger, it's because at any moment, this flimsy existence, a little something goes wrong and we're at the throes of death. The mechanism of the body, it's so complicated. A little something doesn't work right. It's over. In moments or anything. We're walking along the road and something. We're just sitting quietly in anything. It's very dangerous. And we should all be very aware. It's not just like, you know, some kind of doom and gloom message. It's just a fact. It's a very precarious situation. And it's precarious like a drop of water that's balancing on the leaf of a lotus flower. And a slight movement and it falls. Very precarious. So, knowing that, we have to fix our consciousness. As if, at any moment, it's our moment to leave this body. So that moment comes, or the circumstances that seem to be jiggling the leaf, fix your consciousness. That's the first priority. And that needs to be passed on to dependents. And one who has prepared their dependents like that, then they can be like Srivas Thakur, when his son departed, left his body during the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his home. So what he told his family members is, "How glorious! Why are you moaning and grieving? This is glorious. We all have to give up the body, and to give up the body during the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where he's personally present, singing and dancing in ecstasy with many, many, many devotees. That's glorious." So one who can be situated in Krishna consciousness, in the Lord's service, some difficulty comes, even that difficulty comes that results in death or some other kind of severe hardship. If one's consciousness remains fixed in the Lord, that's glorious. And there's always going to be something or something or 10 somethings. Because it's the material world. So accepting the responsibility of subordinates, that's a big decision. Taking responsibility of a wife. Taking the responsibility of children. Taking the responsibility for others who you're extending Krishna consciousness to. You could lead a life of irresponsibility and don't do any of those things, because this might be a big, big burden, lots of trouble, big headache. Don't do it. It's an option one could consider, but it's not not a life of responsibility. And then you take responsibility, then you're leaving yourself open for being disturbed when disturbances come. You should never care about somebody. Because if you do, you're going to have some pain. That's one philosophy. Just become an impersonalist. Don't care about anybody, including yourself, because you'll get cut or hurt or old or sick or die. It's an option, impersonalism. But if one is a personalist, then they're taking shelter of the Lord, and training those who working with those that, in whatever the various relationships are, shelter taking, protection is found in shelter taking. Anything else? Yeah.
Well,
today's Ekadasi. Just okay. While Yeah.
So this Indra initiates because see that he was facing difficulties and no one was helping him. He was not getting help even from the devotees also.
That's right.
So it leads to the thought that as if they were not on the proper step, right? So, but what we should learn from this is that there is one of the side, but that doesn't seem good.
It wasn't good. So for what we should learn from that is we shouldn't make the same mistake. From the mistakes of others, we should learn how we should not make the same mistake.
But we can say what others do.
What?
It seems that they were not on the proper step.
I heard you, and I agreed. They were not. Even they were not, still Prabhupada was inviting them. Not depending, but inviting. Why was he doing that? Because it was the will of his spiritual master that cooperate. He knew that they were not likely to. He wasn't counting on them to do so. But he was fulfilling the instruction of his spiritual master. Are we done? Yeah.
How to change our conception from material to spiritual conception?
How to change our conception? By hearing the right conception. Well, the standard way is, if you understand what a misconception, in order to replace something, you're holding on to something. And somebody wants to hand me the kartals. I have to let go of this something before I can take the kartals. So the hearing, the fallacy or the error of the misconception, and the multiple fallacies of the misconception, primary effort has to go there. Not only the initial, but primary effort has to go there. So that I'm even in a position I can take the next one, or a replacement, an alternative. And then, of course, hearing very clearly and repeatedly and regularly, proper conception. Along with, side by side, Prabhupada describes that our spiritual progress is made in, like a train has two tracks, our progress in spiritual life is made with the parallel method of standard knowledge together with the means of cleansing the heart. So we chant Hare Krishna and we read Srimad Bhagavatam. And we do those with submission. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And you said that you should please 15% of Godhead. My question is, I personally don't know much about him, and so, but is like I know something about their representatives. His representative. So
it's
pleasing
them as same as pleasing Supreme Personality of Godhead? Yes. When we do those activities, it should be, it's advised, it's recommended that our consciousness also goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By this act of pleasing the representative, this is pleasing to the Personality of Godhead. We don't want to eclipse the Personality of Godhead by a cult figure. You follow? Some processes do like that. The organization may be known by the leader, not by the Lord. When Srila, I was noteworthy, very, very striking actually. When Srila Prabhupada left his body to return to Krishna's eternal pastimes in November of 1977, the media covered it. They didn't even know his name. They just knew that he was the leader of the Hare Krishna movement. What became popularized around the world was the Hare Krishna movement. And he was the leader. Incidental was his name. Krishna, Hare Krishna. In contrast, many of the other persons who were prominent leaders of religious organizations were known by their name. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, and was very popular at that time, and some others and some others. So we're not a cult, we're worshippers of Krishna. While we're worshippers of Krishna, learning what is pleasing to Krishna and who is Krishna, etc., through the medium of the representative of Krishna. And pleasing them is not different than pleasing Krishna. In fact, pleasing them is more pleasing to Krishna than our efforts to please Krishna, were they done independently. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that's circular? Srimad Bhagavatam says to serve the Lord, and the Bhagavatam says that we should, what was the second half? But it's not, your doubt isn't that that seems circular. It is your doubt? That is your doubt. One thought, I don't know if this is the totality of response that's best, but those kinds of dilemmas or seemingly circular arguments, if you step back, look at the whole picture, the problem disappears. Conversely, if you apply the material yardstick of cause and effect, which comes first, this or this, this is the cause, that's the result, the result becomes the cause of the next thing, and then it becomes an apparent contradiction. So my recommendation, something that I do personally with those kinds of circumstances, of, because I have very logical mind also, and I was trained that way, and it just functioned that way. So part of my logic says, step back, look at the whole picture, and the problem goes away. The whole picture is, there are different components. It's not only cause-effect, there are different components. one of the components is there's this message coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the Vedas. So we should approach that message coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the Vedas. And then it's a subset of that, but it's also part of the whole picture. There's various duties that we should do, indicated within the scriptures, within the Srimad Bhagavatam and other authorized scriptures. So on that authority we do those duties. There's the spiritual master. And it's not like they're separated, distinct entities that don't have any overlapping or interrelating with one another. They're part of the whole picture. So we apply the message of the scriptures under the direction of the spiritual master. That's our access to the Lord, who discloses things about himself through the scripture, and the purification in our life that comes through the application of those duties. Step back, look at the whole picture, and there's different components. And they're interrelated, but it's not just cause-effect becomes a cause, becomes an effect, which then becomes a cause and becomes an effect, creating an effect. It's not just linear like that. There's probably a more complete way of answering your question. That's just especially in the beginning of my reading of the scriptures, I would almost like by training look for such little glitches, and I would get stuck. I wouldn't like to spin my wheels and stay there, but it would kind of like bug me. Why this should all be very logical. And it is logical, but it's not just linear logic. Yes.
How to create the feeling of love for our spiritual receptors. I'm from such a personal background.
The how-to questions, I'll just share something with you first. These how-to questions, I've been getting a lot of them during my visit. And my thought is just to have a flashcard and say, by the process of Krishna consciousness, because it's very broad. If you follow the process of Krishna consciousness very nicely, then naturally that will be there. But so, having said that, because your question is very sincere, we all come from differing degrees, all of us more or less, of impersonal background. By that I mean, even if we have been engaged since childhood in some form of worship, where there's personality instead of just philosophy where there's no personality, still even that is done largely in an impersonal way. It's mechanical, and the sense of person is not so prominent. We're all in the same boat, in other words. There's several things. One can look at, okay, there are these two paths. You assess this one and assess this one. And where is that path of impersonalism taking people? Myself included. And this path is very obviously a path of personalism, implicitly, explicitly, or as one devotee says, internally, externally, and eternally. Personal. And where does that take? So if I have a desire, then the markers along the road are there. And largely, so it's this, it's awakening the, a desire for a relationship. And even that's, in this material world, a buzzword that becomes impersonalized. It just was going outside for chanting this morning, and the back of somebody's new car was a little slogan, drive home a relationship. And there's no relationship with an automobile. But that's people's idea of a relationship. A relationship is where there's primarily from our side, with spiritual preceptors, that's your question. It's from our side, the relationship is three things. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tadidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. You know that verse? 434, Bhagavad Gita, you can look it up later. Three things from our side. First is to recognize who's a tattva darshi. Find someone who you feel has a vision of the truth. Finding such a person, submission, pranipat, pariprash, ask questions, be inquisitive. And when you hear, even if it's experimentally, let me try it out. So it's not just hot air passing in two directions. It's the submission is crowned with service. I'll apply it. And in other practical ways, I'll do some simple service. Like one of the traditional things with teachers in the Vedic system is the students would bring something to their teacher. On behalf of the teacher, they would go and request something on behalf of the teacher, some grain, something, you know, for my teacher, Mataji. So, or even in America, one of the classic things was you bring to the teacher an apple or some flowers, just as a gesture. Something akin to patram pushpam palam toyam. But do it with, the item is not the significant thing. It's cultural. It's nice. But it's with some feeling. This doesn't repay you for all the teaching you're giving me in the classroom. But here is a token. This is what's in my heart. It's being expressed by this gesture. It's culturally pleasing. It's appropriate. And it's part of the process of personalizing our relationship with the teacher. Submission, inquisitiveness, inquiry, and some service. Let me take some service. Let me, whatever it is, I'll buy the vegetables for the devotees once a week, and I'll do that as a service to you. I'll clean the floor, I'll do whatever it is. And see those services, it may be in relation to others who are students, but it's service to the teacher, because the teacher cares about the students. The teacher is training the students. So if I take the service, let me do it very, very nicely. with the view in mind of pleasing the teacher, so that Krishna will be pleased. Basically, it's just you're opening your heart to a relationship with Krishna. That's what's going on. The medium is the teacher. It's not drive home a relationship. It's a person. Because on the car doesn't give back, but a person does. When Krishna sees such dealings, as we are having the capacity to love, Krishna has the capacity to love thousands of times greater than even we can imagine. And Krishna reciprocates in so many ways. So be open to pick up on how Krishna reciprocates, even in that relationship with your spiritual preceptor. Krishna will reciprocate. The preceptor will reciprocate. Krishna will reciprocate. Hundreds of times, Prabhupada said, we take one step towards Krishna. And can take that as a step towards Krishna, developing a personal relationship with your preceptor. So your question, now I'm going into what will happen if you do, but that's part of how is to understand those things will happen. Let me get my screen up and just see how those things are happening. But the components are basically three. Submission, that's from the heart. It may very well include some externalization by body and words and disposition of mind, but it's from the heart. Submission. In the material world, people don't. It's a sign of weakness if you do. You're foolish. You'll be taken advantage of. You'll not grow and become a man if you're macho. You'll become... But that's the material conception. The spiritual conception is submission. Inquiry, not rhetoric. Like sometimes people would ask Prabhupada a question and Prabhupada would not answer their question by saying, how will this help you advance in Krishna consciousness? I can supply you the answer. But if I were to supply you with the answer, now how is that going to help you advance in Krishna consciousness? What's the purpose behind? So the question should be, just as your question, so I'm spending time with it. It's a good question. So I can advance in Krishna consciousness. So I can leave behind this impersonal upbringing tendency and come to a submissions, inquiry, and service. And even if the service is small, seemingly inconsequential, let it be done with some real devotion. Priti Purvakam. I would say another very important part in response to your question is taking a very close look at the conceptions. Don't apply a material conception to something that is not material. Hold up your material yardsticks to something that's not material. And what measurement do you get? You get bewildered measurement. And it's common. It's practically pervasive. It's our training. You get rewarded by doing that. Throughout all of your academic training, you've gotten many perks for doing that. and since time immemorial, great thinkers get their rewards for exactly doing that. And it doesn't hold. It's right in the Bhagavatam. It's what Yamaraj is saying right here. Great rishis, he gives their names, so many great rishis, situated in goodness, what to speak of us, situated in goodness. Great, great ponderers have put enormous energy in trying to understand. They can't understand. So, we should learn from the mistakes of others and not repeat them. Don't apply material yardsticks to something that's not material. So that means we have to go back and make sure that we have a spiritual conception of what is spiritual. How are they different? What's the difference between the soul and the body? What's the difference between spiritual and material? They're very fundamental. It's not highly technical like rocket science. It's quite simple and fundamental. Then we have to take shelter of the spiritual conception and apply the standards and measures of that which is spiritual to that which is spiritual. That takes a little personalism. A little effort. Also. But personalism is naturally, there's some effort because we care about the person. And these things are gradual. It's understood that they will be gradual. They are gradual. It's not like it's midnight and then it's noon. Gradual. So we should be cultivating. Consciously, although incrementally, consciously cultivating these efforts, its consciousness. So I think I'm going to end after 8 o'clock. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.